Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wizard World Philadelphia as the crowd applauds wildly! Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know this next person from countless television, film, and stage pieces, but we know and love him best as Boromir from Lord of the Rings and Ned Stark from Game of Thrones. Please give it up for Mr. Sean Bean! Feel bad about that a little bit.
Yeah.
you entered with such vigor. It was amazing. Thank you so much for being here. You were not one for doing a lot of cons. I know we met in St. Louis. Is this your second one officially, or you know how many have you done, and how do you feel about the convention scene?
Second one, yeah.
Yeah, my gosh. Yeah. It's a whirlwind, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, listen, we've got a lot of questions out there, and we have a very limited time, so I definitely want to get to those questions in a second. But you've had such a prolific career, and you know we'll get to the fan faves in a bit. But I would love to hear how you started, because I started in theater myself. I know you started in theater and studied theater, so I'd love to hear a little about you know your early start as an actor in theater, and then how that eventually transitioned into British television and film, and then eventually into Hollywood.
I guess I started quite late, really, because I was about 19 or 20 when I got interested in acting.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, or I wasn't really very good at the things I did want to do. I kind of slipped into it accidentally, and it felt great when I was doing it. I went to a college in Rotherham, where I first started acting, really, on an acting course, and then I went from that on to RADA, Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in London, and from then on, you know, I was really happy with myself, and you know, it felt quite good.
Yeah, what was the point? I mean, because when you're a theater lover, when you're a lover of theater, and you're a theater actor, that's your thing. You know, you love getting in front of the live audience and performing. And you did mostly classical work to start, is that right?
Yeah, I left drama school, left RADA, and then I went and did a very small play, Romeo and Juliet, with about six characters in it, and we're all doubling up, and then I went to Glasgow Citizens Theatre, which was a wonderful experience, though people like Gary Oldman and Kieran Hines and lots of good people like yeah. So that was a very interesting kind of period of time. That was about 1985, 84, 85.
Yeah.
And then Royal Shakespeare Company, so I did quite a lot of theatre before I did much television or film, really, and that was a great kind of grounding. It was a great time to kind of experiment and try things out without being up on the big screen. It was just a learning process, and I'm really pleased that I had that kind of, I came from that kind of theatrical background, if you like, because it gives you, you feel as though it gives you a lot of stability and a lot of strength for the future.
Do you feel like the theatre is the thing that you would always come back to? Because I mean, I know you've done it recently and been able to go back and play some really seminal roles, you know, in Shakespeare and in just classic roles in general. So do you feel like that's where you're always drawn back to, or is there another medium that you like enjoy more out of all of them?
I've not done any theatre for about 14 years, which is probably too long, really. I guess it's just a totally different kind of. It's not a totally different thing. You get buzz from theatre, but you also get you can also get tired of it if you're doing like 360 performances,
right,
and you're kind of halfway through. And so there is that initial joy and rush of adrenaline and euphoria, but. I kind of get that feeling by doing television and films now, and you know, so I don't know, there's nothing like a live audience like this.
Yeah. The roar of the
crowd reminds me.
What was the transition like at the time? I know you got involved in British television and film to start. I'd love to hear sort of about that, like how you wound up transitioning from theater and then eventually made your way to the States and to Hollywood.
Well, I was doing theatre, and then some people see you, and then there were just small television roles, you know, and I think the first one I was playing some guy who robbed a post office in London, and I really enjoyed it, you know, and I guess I was only 22, 23, and you throw everything into your work, and you're kind of just looking for work, looking for something to kind of further your career and give you more experience. So I guess it was a very kind of slow process. I did a lot of television, then I started doing films. I got some good breaks in films with a film called Stormy Monday and Patriot Games, and built up from there, and so I've not really noticed a big transition. I'm just feel very fortunate that I've been able to have the opportunities that I have, and after starting off wanting to be an actor on stage and seeing it kind of progress, I'm very aware of that, and I'm kind of very grateful for it.
Some of my earliest forays into your big breaks, which are some of my favorite films of all time. You mentioned one of them, Patriot Games, and of course 006 and GoldenEye. Give him a round of applause for that. Yeah. I just remember seeing them, they're relatively back-to-back, I think within two or three years of each other, and I just thought to myself at the time, this guy, this is him, this is the new villain, this is going to be our new British villain, you know what I mean? How was it like getting involved with those productions?
Oh, it was great, to be involved with GoldenEye, James Bond film, playing the bad guy, 006, it was, quite an experience, and it was the first time Pierce Brosnan had starred as James Bond, so it was an exciting time. You're not really aware of when you're making these films like Bond films and Lord of the Rings game, you're not aware of the kind of epic kind of size of the project that you're on. It's only when it comes out and you see it on screen and you see all the kind of work that went into it that you realise you are on a... It's a good job we don't know how big they are, because I'd be shooting myself in billions of people watching me.
Well, at the time, GoldenEye, like you said, it was Bond had not been around for a while. It was such a huge series, you know what I mean? And so you guys were basically reinventing it, but you didn't feel that pressure at the time. Had you been a Bond fan growing up, just seeing the films and such?
I had, but I wasn't a massive Bond fan.
Right.
I was, I watched them when they were on at Christmas and things like that. My dad took me to see a few Bond films when I was a kid and stuff like that. So I was always aware of it. But sometimes you realise the magnitude and how just how kind of widespread and that your face is going to be shown, and that just how big these productions are. And they just kind of seem to get bigger and bigger, which I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But at least there was some acting in GoldenEye.
And one of the greatest video games of all time as well. So you were represented in 3D for everyone to see as well.
Yeah. It's supposed to be good in it, that game. I've got a square head in it.
Yeah, exactly. It was cutting edge at the time, Well, let's get to some questions. We've got a lot of people standing here waiting in line that I'm sure want to hear some stuff from you. So let's start over here on this side. Yeah.
Okay, my question is, if you had to pick a sigil and a motto for House Bean, what would it be?
So for your own personal house, if there was a House Bean, right? So House Stark and House Targaryen, what would your signal be? And then also a saying, right, maybe?
Is that?
Yeah. Do you have it?
My signal?
Your signal, the actual,
Your sigil.
Sigil, I know.
Oh, my sign.
Yeah. That's close to your coat of arms, if you will.
Harry Cobb Bean, Broad Bean. Run a bean.
Just like a green bean.
Yeah. Like a string bean, a runner bean, That'd be my sign. Yeah. And I don't know what my saying would be. Maybe I've been and gone.
That's a perfect one. What's great about that is the setup of just seeing the image of the green bean, but then having such a beautiful saying.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Hey.
If you had to die like one character you've played, which death would you choose?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, because they've all been really horrible, violent. I was trying to think of the most serene and kind of peaceful. is horrible.
Was there a scene? I'm curious as like a follow up. Was there a fun death scene that like particularly stands out from any of the movies? Is like fun to shoot or like fun to be a part of around set?
I wouldn't say they were fun.
Interesting.
There was a few, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think. Can anybody remember if I...
Some of our favorites.
I mean, it sounds a horrible thing to say, but I can't remember if I died peacefully.
Boromir's was pretty epic. You got to admit.
It wasn't quite peacefully. I mean, he was quite heroically, and I think he knew his fate, and I think he was quite okay with that, and so I thought that was quite... yeah. He wanted that to happen, I think.
Exactly, because he has that moment of revelation. That's what's so beautiful about how it was depicted in the movie. Not a knock against the books, you know what I mean? But in the books, you hear about it through other characters. In the movie, we get to see it live, and your like portrayal of that moment really felt like he was a human, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think he thought he did not overstep the mark, but I mean, he kind of shown his greed and his anger towards Frodo in that scene where he tries to steal the ring from him, and I think he's kind of... he kind of resigns himself to that he is mortal and that he's at peace with being kind of slaughtered, really, and strangely. it's a kind of acceptance, and I think especially with the scene with Viggo, and we, you know, I kind of realise that I'm fading away and I'm going, and you know, I just want to say I could have been a better man than I was, but
I'm tearing up just listening to you speak about the scene. Thank you. Yeah. You know, so it's funny. I mean, obviously, I'm sure you've heard this a million times.
Always talk about death.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, there's been a lot of memes made from you on the internet. One of them is the 1001 Ways to Die, right? One of my favorites is The One Does Not Simply, and then Replacing Walk No Mortar, and then Winter Is Coming. Like, let's talk about the death ones, you know, as the death started to rack up. How did you start to become aware of this, like, behind-the-scenes sort of people counting down your deaths?
Not really, no. Someone brought it to my attention now.
Yeah.
And then I guess there was a video made, and they said that I died the most. I was the one who died the most in front of them. And they said I wasn't. Then they said Christopher Lee was recently.
Oh.
Which I find quite hard to believe.
Because you worked at the...
I was leading, and... unless Christopher Lee's been resurrected.
Now it's become a comp you didn't care about at all. Now maybe it's a little mild competition.
Yeah, maybe I'm getting a bit pissed off. I said,
you're going to have to start taking some other roles that just have death roles.
Yeah, exactly. Just carry on the trend.
Amazing. Thank you. Hey.
Do you have a favorite recollection from the set of Caravaggio, or any memories of working with Derek Jarman specifically?
Yes, I do. I have very kind of vivid and fond memories of working with Derek. He was an incredible filmmaker, and I met him in Charing Cross Road in London for my kind of interview for him for Caravaggio, and he was just an incredible individual with imagination. He was curious. I was inquisitive as to what what he was interested in and what he wanted to portray on screen. And he was just different, and he experimented, and he was avant-garde. He really kind of asked a lot of questions. That was an incredible experience to work with him, and to work with the other characters involved, like Tilda Swinton and Nigel Terry at the time. And I was only pretty young and early in my career then, but so it left a big impression on me. Just his independent thought, his he didn't conform to any kind of film, kind of theatrical standards. He made the story he wanted to make, and he was out there, you know, he really was cutting edge. And it was scary and dangerous, and that's why I'll never forget it. He was an incredible man, you know. An incredible film, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Awesome, thanks. Over here.
Hi, Sean. Out of all the characters who have met their demise that you've played, is there one that you wish would have had a longer story, or you would have liked to have played longer?
Yeah, probably all of them.
You get paid the longer in something.
Yeah. I think, with Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones, I suppose. But I mean, there was nothing, you know, you can really do about that, because the writers said that I must die at some point. And that's what I did. You can't really kind of change Tolkien's writing just because I want to be in the films a bit longer. Yeah, there are roles that I think, like, I wish I'd have been in it a bit longer. And but then again, some of the directors and producers think, I wish we hadn't killed him off so early. So.
Yeah.
So it's your fault.
Back engine, yeah. What if they had changed the entire plot line of Lord of the Rings just so you could have stayed in one longer? We would have taken it. We would have accepted that fan petition. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks. Thank you.
At least you can get on with the jobs, you know, you think, well, okay, I'm working, get killed off, at least I can do something else now.
Get killed off again and rack up the numbers, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like football managers again. They go into one job and they get fired, and then they go into another, this will get paid for it.
There you go.
What do you think that Boromir would have done with the ring if he stole it from Frodo?
Oh. This is the segue. This is if Boromir lived.
Yeah.
Where would you go?
I think at that moment in time, he probably wouldn't have used it very well. I can't imagine the state he was in. I don't think he would have been very... it would have been a very good thing for anybody, really. Because I think he was under a spell. I think he was in a kind of trance, you know, quite an evil kind of way. So I don't think it would have been good for him to have it. It might be good for Shadow to be in the next two films, but I don't know what I'm doing with it.
Had you been a fan, we talked a little bit about Bond, but had you read the stories beforehand, like been a fan of the series as a whole? And, you know, how did you wind up auditioning for it, or getting the role of Boromir and, like, you know, and all that?
I auditioned for Boromir, and I met Peter Jackson in London, and I just did that scene. The one where I tried to take the ring off Frodo, and I didn't think it was very good. It was just in a crappy little room in London, not very kind of conducive to kind of much dramatic drama, really. I must have done all right because I got the part, but it was very strange doing it, and doing it in front of Peter, and because he didn't give much away, you know. He just said, yeah, great. And I was quite surprised when I got the part, I must say, you know, but I was absolutely over the moon as well, you know, really delighted.
My gosh, how about then the transfer from Peter Jackson's apartment in London to New Zealand, beautiful New Zealand. My gosh, it had to be amazing when you were there to see, you know, the worlds come to life. Because, you know, at the time they were still shooting a lot on, you know, sets and movie sets and backlots and things like that. But, you know, Peter shot all on location, and it had to be amazing. I'd love to hear a little about that.
Yeah, we shot all over New Zealand, and you know, it's the most beautiful countryside, and having, you know, that opportunity to get up every day, and we used to drive ourselves in and see these forests, and you know, I remember the glaciers when we're all walking over those mountains, and they used to get us in a helicopter and take us to these glaciers, which I wasn't too fond of, you know, because I wasn't really fond of flying in a glass kind of bottomed helicopter. I wasn't keen on flying at the time, but just to have the opportunity to work over there for a long period of time, for about a year, and to be involved most days, and we'll, you know, go kind of camaraderie, and there's a kind of bond between us all, you know, especially the people in the Fellowship of the Ring. You would get a great understanding and a great friendship, but just to have that opportunity to go to I've never been to New Zealand before. I didn't realise how big these films were going to become, and we were quite ordinary and kind of just got on with things, you know, and I think that was probably the right attitude, you know. As I said, if we'd have known how big it were, we might have been a little apprehensive, but
Yeah, it felt, and I think we can all agree with that, you know, it felt like you were a genuine fellowship, you know, that you had come together under these strange circumstances, but were willing to make it work, and you can feel that in all of your performances.
Yeah.
Especially having to be, like, up in these kind of treacherous, you know, sort of landscapes and situations, like, you really did have to kind of bond and work together.
Yeah, at the end of bond.
Bond.
Yeah, we did bond, yeah.
I didn't say you had to get bombed, I just said you got bombed.
I thought you bombed.
Yeah. Awesome.
Hey, my question is there a star that you would like to see when you were younger?
A star?
Like an actor or an artist?
Yeah, there was quite a few. You know, one of the first stars I saw was Ian McKellen, and he was playing Macbeth. And, up north, you know, where I come from in England, in Yorkshire, a place called Wath-upon-Dern, which Ian and Judi Dench was playing Lady Macbeth, and I had to see that, that was quite incredible. So Ian McKellen was quite a hero of mine, and he still is, you know. I watched all that he did and all that he has done, and quite an incredible actor. Then there were people like John Hurt and Peter O'Toole, Richard Harris, all of whom I got to work with. So that was quite an experience, meeting your heroes, and certainly when they live up to expectations as well, you know. Sometimes they seem larger than life, especially like someone like Richard Harris, but he actually is. And it's a wonderful job in that sense, that you're able to meet your heroes and act with them and tell everyone that you're
yeah, my gosh, how was that?
And Dad, you know,
I mean, how was that? Yeah, my gosh, on Lord of the Rings, I'm getting to work with Ian, you know what I mean? Did you tell him how big of an influence he was on your life or growing up?
Yes, I did, and you know, he was, I mean, he's a lovely man, he's a great man, and intelligent, very imaginative, and you know, and kind of very noble, and he comes from up north like me, and you know, I think I have a lot of common with him. I liked his humour and his candidness, his honesty, and I like watching him, and I like how he phrases things, how he phrases sentences, especially Shakespeare. Just this very accomplished and very an incredible man to watch, I think.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you. Hey, this is so cool. You're like my favorite actor of all time. What's your favorite experiences in Lord of the Rings as acting as Boromir?
My favorite experiences in Lord of the Rings, yeah. I guess my death. I keep going back to that, but that was quite, you know, an experience, and I thought it worked out really well. You know, cinema wise. I don't know, with Lord of the Rings it was like a dream in a sense. There were so many days and so many locations that we went to, and over such a long period of time, that it's very difficult to kind of pick it apart and isolate anything. I suppose one of the most memorable experiences when we were in canoes going between those two massive valleys with the you know, the statues above. I can't remember what they're called now, but that was just so brilliant to film that, and you really got a sense of the epic quality of Lord of the Rings. It was the real thing, as you said. Peter Jackson liked it. Try and use the locations as best he could, and just that moment it just felt wonderful. It felt very peaceful, very epic, and I don't know, it's a great moment.
Yeah, no,
I don't think I said anything, that was just rowing but in my heart now.
No, it's such a beautiful moment with the music, and all, we're seeing all the characters, yeah. You know, and then yeah. The pulls away, and we're really getting the expanse of the world. And
sure,
and,
yeah.
Amazing.
Ned Stark, cheers.
Cheers.
In terms of like the final, you know, watching on the screen, what scene were you proudest of from season one of Game of Thrones?
I like the scenes with my kids, you know, with Sansa and Bran and stuff like that. I like the scenes with Mark Addy, the king. They were very funny, and I've worked with Mark before, and he's a lovely man, and so they were quite memorable, and they seen as Lena Headey, and the connivers, you know, the kind of treacherous people in it. I like the kind of mind games, the battles, and I just like the fact that Ned was kind of trapped by his obligations to the king, and he was torn between that and his family, and he made the wrong decision, I guess, at the end. He found himself in a pit of vipers, you know, in a very treacherous kind of world, which he wasn't really equipped for. But it was that dichotomy of thinking, do I stand by my family, or do I go down there? And, you know, how he was torn apart, and you know, he was very vulnerable, very, very heroic. He was a good man. There's not very many of them in Game of Thrones, but he was a good, honourable guy, I think.
You mentioned the scenes with the very child actors at the time, who have now grown up, my gosh, into the leads. And it's cool because you can see the father still there, you know what I mean, in their character. Have you stayed up with the series, you know what I mean, and watched sort of their growth throughout it? Because again, it is amazing to watch the development and still feel, and then we're getting flashbacks to like young Ned Stark, you know what I mean? So it's nice to kind of see that loop happening now on the series.
Yeah, it's funny to see everyone, you know, growing up, and especially, you know, my kids, and it's great, and you know, it's always 7 years, you know. I saw people start when they were like 11 and 12, and now they're 17 or 19, and I mean, it's something that I kind of dip in and out of, and I guess I just want to watch it properly, watch it the whole as a box set, and watch it properly. But I do like to keep looking in and out, see what's happening, because it's a great series, and you know, I'm very proud to be involved, and he's just gone from strength to strength, but yeah.
Very nice, awesome. We only have time for a couple more questions. Let's start over here.
Hello, Mr. Bean, how are you?
Hello.
Oh. Please excuse my voice, I lost it. I was wondering, actually, one of your more lesser known roles is as Sharp, and I was wondering if they were... Never mind. I was wondering if there was a possibility, because Hollywood is doing a lot of revisiting in the older things that have gone on the last 15 to 20 years or so, if you would be interested as kind of coming back to Sharp and revisiting that role, and maybe passing on the torch or ending it completely, or what your thoughts are on that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for. I'm glad you like Sharp. I'm glad you all. You know. Yeah. Thank you very much. He was a. You know, it meant a lot to me. I played him for many, many years. But what do you mean handing the torch? You mean being in it for the first episode and then saying, right, it's all your responsibility to a younger actor.
He comes to the professor, dies immediately while handing off a torch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what you say.
You mean principally.
Yeah. No, I think that, I mean, it was a brilliant concept at the time, and it was a fantastic, like, Boyzone stuff. It was a very entertaining kind of drama. And I guess you'd have to think about it in a different kind of age, and I'm quite a few years older now, but I think I'd be jumping around... quite as lively as I was, you know, 25 years ago. But I mean, it's something that, you know, it means, you know, it's very close to my heart, Sharp, and it's a wonderful series, but I can't really see it coming back. I think it was there, we did it, and like I said, been there, done that. Been a young thing.
We've got the Frankenstein Chronicles to enjoy right now.
Hello, Sean.
Right here.
Hiya. One of the best actors I've ever seen in cinema in a long time, when it came from just your work with just as Boromir from Lord of the Rings or Ned Stark from Game of Thrones. But my question is pretty much serious when it comes to Silent Hill.
Yeah.
Now, I understand you didn't die in that movie, and thank God you didn't. Because I kind of want to see if your character has one more hurrah, or at least there will be a Silent Hill 3. I'm not sure fans didn't take the second one very well, but what can you tell me about that?
Not a great deal, not about the third one anyway. it's something that was interesting, and I quite like some of the kind of weird, kind of perverted things that happened in the Silent Hill 1 and 2. Can't really see it going into a third one, but I don't know. Who knows?
Thank you.
It was fun to do, yeah.
Everybody just wants you back, Sean, in all the series that we love, you know?
Oh,
I'm still waiting for that Equilibrium reboot, too. That was one of my favorites as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, my gosh, I love that. Cool, I think we have time for one final question over here.
Okay, I actually was going to ask a sharp question as well, but that was actually wrong. But you played like some spies before with like Legend, the short-lived series that I loved. But would you ever, since you were in Bond, did you ever consider maybe like going for Bond or like doing like going for Bond himself or playing that role?
Well, I guess I thought, well, maybe I'd be okay for that. I don't know. And there was some kind of talk about it at the time. It was quite a long time ago. Didn't work out. And I thought, well, give him 006 then, So, obviously, I guess it's everybody's kind of dream to be able to play a part like James Bond, but I don't think it was my time, at that time.
Yeah.
No, so not.
Are there any things you're looking forward to, not necessarily specific roles or specific parts, but just things you're looking forward to in your career, things that you like the trend of and you want to continue moving on?
I like doing just different things, really, and maybe do some theatre, I don't know, or something, maybe comedy, or I'm doing it at the moment, doing kind of animation and some voices for that, and I just think it's the world we're living in, the technology and everything now, there's some really quite interesting projects that actors can get involved with, and I just like doing different kind of genres of acting, really. So I just see what comes up. I'm always pleasantly surprised, and I like the unexpected in a sense that, I don't have any projects. I think, right, that's what I'm going to do next. It's what I'm going to do in a few years. I just like to see what kind of hits me and what makes me tick and what makes me, excited and passionate.
Right. Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, I know I speak for all the fans here when I say thank you for making Wizard World Philadelphia your second con of all time.